And this is big in our company right now. And every morning someone does a meeting and they say what they're going to do to change the company. Because, you know, so often in companies or employees or even us, we say, you do this, you change this, you can change. But how often do we look at what can I change? Mm-hmm. What can I make better? And so right now, everybody, when they lead a meeting, I say, don't tell me what someone else can do. Tell me what you can do. Mm. That doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. And that's where we got to change the persona. So many times when people say, oh, I'm looking at myself, I got to be doing something wrong. No, it means we're changing. It means we're getting better. It means we're learning and growing. And that's the point. You know, it doesn't mean, oh, you're horrible. Everything puts a negative or a positive connotation. And I'm trying to change that within our company. Just because you say you can do something better doesn't mean you did something wrong.
Welcome to another episode of the Profitable Property Management Podcast. I am interviewing Tiffany Rosenbaum from Rosenbaum Realty Group. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to jam, hear a little bit about your background and story. Why don't we start here with the current business as it stands today? Tell me a little about size, scope, location, et cetera.
Okay, so we're Rosenbaum Realty Group. We're out of Phoenix Metroplex. And we manage about 500 doors. We're just opening up a short-term rental division. But our niche is multifamily and a little bit of single family. And we actually have, our global team is about the size of 18 right now. Mm-hmm. And we have a maintenance company to go along with that.
How long have you been in the business?
We started 2013 we got our broker.
And did you start on the brokerage side or on the PM side?
PM side.
Mm-hmm. And do you? What about the brokerage? Is that a meaningful component as well? Or?
Not like what you would see from a lot of people. We help our investors buy and get into the property management side, but we deal primarily with investors. I don't go out and find a buyer and help them buy and sell homes.
Let's start here. What do you love about this business?
Oh, I love property management. I'm the crazy. I love property management. I love real estate. So when I was growing up, my dad always taught me that you need to have an income that pays you on the side as much as you're making in your job. And so he always said real estate was the way to do that. And so I always personally wanted to be in real estate. But how we got into it was we were in Utah and we were moving and we were going to move to Indiana to start up a business with a friend. I had a really bad feeling about it. So I call it divine intervention or whatever, but I had a feeling we needed to move to Arizona. And when we got here, we started up our own little business in a lot of tears, had no money. But my dad came into town and said, I don't care what you do, you got to figure out how to get into real estate. It's the prime time.
He was just really clear.
He was very clear. You have to get into real estate, figure it out, get into it. It was 2010. And so that was a perfect time to start investing. We had no money given. I wasn't turning on the heat in my home. I was on food storage. I didn't turn on my AC. I had a little child that was, he was about 18 months, and we had a space heater, and it was 50 degrees in our home. And I remember walking into the kitchen and crying, going, I have no clue how I'm gonna feed my child the next day. And I mean, a lot of tears between my husband and I trying to figure this out. But given we found someone that would loan us money, have no clue why, but very grateful to this day for the individual that did it. And I remember our first home trying to figure this out. It was a triplex, trying to figure out real estate and all the mistakes we made, knocking on the door to grab rent, okay? But we got into it, and then our first client came on, and a little bit before that when we were underneath another brokerage, and we found him through Facebook. And he had hired some contractor that walked off on him. And we were like, can we just put a for rent sign out in front of your property so our property can do okay? And from then, he just brought on 20, 40 units with us. And we just started rolling and said, okay, this is where we need to be. We dropped off the other company that we were starting. And we said, this is our home, and this is where we need to be.
There's beauty kind of reflecting back on those scrappy days, huh?
Yeah, I wouldn't change them. I love the struggle because, and you're a business owner, you know the struggle of starting up a business and going through the struggle. I think it's what makes you. Mm. It makes you be able to hire people and understand where they're coming from. And the struggle is what gets us where we want to be. If you have no struggle, you don't have the joy, the happiness of the journey and all that.
Mm-hmm. And it's some salt, some seasoning. It provides some perspective.
100%.
So as you think about how your leadership has changed and shifted over the years, what comes to mind for you?
Oh, all the mistakes I made.
Love to hear about those.
Oh, I think I made every mistake in the book, Jordan, to be honest. When we started, I wanted things ran a certain way, and I had never been in a huge leadership position. I mean, with companies I had been, but not running my own thing and trying to figure out how to do KPIs and really not micromanage, because I was probably a micromanager when we started, to be honest. Like, come on, it has to be this way, it has to be this way.
A little bit of a hard ass, huh?
Yes, 100%. And then even when we came into the global employment opportunity and hiring remote team members, I still think I made every mistake in the book of micromanaging until I realized, okay, this is not the way to run a business, and I need team members that know what they're doing, so I don't feel like I have to micromanage either. And so we started hiring higher level people and not trying to get the cheapest and going, okay, I don't care if I have to pay twice as much, but if I have the right team member in the right spot that can run with it, then I can let them run and do their thing. And so I think hiring the right people, I made every mistake in the book at first, but I think we've got our team. I love my team. Like, I can go away and just go have fun now and say, okay, you do your thing and we'll roll.
Mm. Your team, you said there was 6 people stateside, is that right?
On our Rosamond Realty Group side, it's my husband and I, mm-hmm. and he's the broker, and I am more of overseeing operations, not in the day-to-day, because I have a director of PM. So I have a director of PM, renewal special, and my controller. And those are the only 3 people that are really boots on the ground, not counting me and my husband, and then my social media expert, a director.
And do you guys have an office, or is that?
We do. We have an in-office. So everybody in the States is in office. And then everybody remote, obviously, is our global team around the world.
So you've obviously drunk quite a bit of Kool-Aid around global workforce and global team.
Yes.
What are your thoughts and feedback on, like, how that went from, like, an idea to becoming clearly obvious to you now?
Okay, so I'm a person that just kind of jumps in and just says, I'll make mistakes and I'll figure it out. Like, really, I loved learning from Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and reading their biographies where, like, Elon Musk is like, hey, blow up as much and learn from it, right? So I'm more of that mentality. And so I hired, my first hire was from, I can't remember the company, Rocket something.
Station.
And yes. Okay. That was it. And I hired an assistant and I was like, they'll help me do what I need to do. I'm busy. And so I brought him in, and the company was great, but I don't think I had my KPIs down right or anything. And I was like, just help me do this. And so every day I'd give a list of what I wanted to be done. I was like, that's not the way to do it. But then I kept on hiring because I needed leasing. I needed renewal specialists. And I was like, anything that doesn't need boots on the ground, I can hire remote. And that's a lot, to be honest. Like social media, leasing, you know, maintenance, all these functions are really phone calls and dispatching. And so we have 18 now, and we just got to the point where we have my operations assistant manager is in El Salvador. He has a team of process architects and trainers. So no longer does my team train. My process architects and right underneath them train everybody. And so, yes, I drank the Kool-Aid and went hardcore because I realized I could hire 4 remotes to 5, depending on the position, for everyone here in the States. And to be honest, I felt like it was a win-win. And, hey, I can help these people make a really good living and provide a home for them in a company that gives them opportunities that they would not have without this.
Now, how do you integrate those teams to make it feel like one team?
Okay, so at first I probably did everything wrong there too. So, and you're gonna probably think I'm crazy when I say this, but everybody's on Zoom all day long. And our cameras are on, and but my operations assistant manager, I would say, has done a phenomenal job. We have a running competition right now, like on Nike Run Club. You can see everybody that's entered it. We have a weight loss challenge on another app. And then we have a review challenge, getting Google reviews. And so we have all these reviews, and everybody comes together. And then no matter if you're remote or not, you get whoever wins gets a hotel stay and a day paid vacation. Number two gets like $300. Number three gets a paid day off. And all these challenges have brought everybody together in a whole nother way. And then we do, on a higher level people, we bring them to the States for conferences. We do certain things to make them feel like they're part of our team. And what really changed is when we put management level people remote. When people saw that we did that, they're like, okay, we're really part of this team.
People with authority.
Yes, people with authority. They can hire, they can fire, they're over our processes. They do everything. And I think that's what changed, where it wasn't just management in the office, it's management remote.
You mentioned authority over processes, and that's a pretty significant one because It affects the practical operational. You know, if somebody, this is one observation I have, is I've seen people put someone in charge of processes, but that person not have any actual organizational authority. And so it may be somebody who has a great process brain, but they don't actually have the ability to enforce anything. The person that you have over your processes, who is that person? What is their role, and how much enforcement capacity do they have?
They have a lot. They're right underneath me. They're right, my right-hand man, besides my director of property management. But he came in from PlayStation, and he was with their ops program.
Dope.
And so I found him, and I brought him on, and I brought him management level. I said, you know, if someone's not listening, then we need to write them up, and I want you to be able to be the one to do that. Because processes have to be reviewed by me. I still review them. It's not like he can do it and do everything, because he's still newer. So I want to make sure I see the processes that are going on, because I know the legal side of it more so than he would, being remote. But he does the process. His team does the process now. He oversees them, and then they regulate them, meaning they make sure that everybody's doing the process correctly. Now, bringing on a new system, sometimes you get people that get pushback. That's where I said, no, you need to address it. Mm-hmm. And if it's not corrected, it's written up. And I don't like to write people up. We want to make it where it's a win. But at sometimes you do find someone that kind of pushes back because they don't like change. And I'm like, there needs to be a level of where you can make that correction and I don't have to jump in.
I think it's very natural to push back, to enforce, and to write people up when you are constructively taking feedback. Yes. And saying, tell me, I'm open, I want to hear it. And where there is merit, I will incorporate and make the changes. And under those parameters, if once I've done all that, you just say no and you refuse, well, tough cookies.
100%. So there's an example about this. So my operations assistant manager and his team, I knew we were struggling with some of my director came to me and said, okay, this person's kind of weaker, meaning they weren't getting the reviews. We require a certain amount of reviews. The technique that they were talking with our residents wasn't finessed enough. And so they went to my operations assistant manager and his team and said, okay, I need you to get a plan together. So they wrote up a plan, and every day they meet with this person. She's now above other people on reviews, and her finesseness has gotten so much better. And it's like, okay, this is what I wanted. Because so many times I find that companies fire someone before they give them the opportunity to really change. Because I think human nature, they really do want to do a good job. But in the PM world, how many times do we give them the right training, the amount of training that people really need, especially in the remote world, because they're not in our shoes and they're not here on our ground. So it's been interesting to bring a trainer on that will go meet with people that are lower level or struggling a little bit, and to see them change in a way that's like, I can do this, and seeing them get up to a level that's surpassing other people that I thought were amazing, you know? So I love that.
I love seeing that investment. One really opinionated way that we function at Lead Simple is that right now, it may not always stay this way, but right now, 10% of our company is people operations. Mm-hmm. 10% of our company is focused on hiring, recruiting, training, retaining, and offboarding and correcting when necessary. I feel so good about that investment. In fact, I feel like that investment is like, it's like the lifeblood pumping through our company. That's not an expense. It's not an expense. It's an investment.
It is.
And in many cases, HR is an expense. And when it's called HR, it kind of feels like one. It kind of feels punitive. People operations, the investment. Oh, that gets me excited because we can grow. If you have a growth mindset, which I do, and you believe that people's capacity to grow is in many cases way more than they thought, which relates to our mission, helping people become and achieve more than they thought possible. That to me is like what I'm getting out of the business that is non-monetary in nature. Therefore, it keeps me more engaged. And the more engaged I am, the more the monetary stuff comes.
Something you said was very important. Like, you can't always monetize it. You can always say you're investing in it. Like, you can't say, hey, this function's gonna do so much. But when I talk to people, it's interesting. They'll say, you're overhired. And I'm like, yeah, I am overhired a little bit right now because I want to grow this team right here that will train everybody and give them the opportunity, which hiring and firing and making sure our process is such that we give our team the right to succeed, the opportunity to succeed. And then when you have this function, your team functions in a whole different light. You know, we were doing it where our PMs were training, and when we were doing that, they weren't getting the training they needed. They weren't getting the time and investment they needed. And now that we have a trainer on our team where they can really go meet on a daily basis, or if someone's struggling, they can go meet and they can go talk and say, hey, what's going on? Where are we lacking? What have you seen? And it's just a whole different atmosphere. Like, bringing this function on has brought a love to our team that I can't put a number on it, to be honest, because I see what it's going to do for us in the future. And a number, I would say, is priceless.
You mentioned that you're making this investment in your processes. How often do you update your processes, and what is the formal process for taking team member feedback to make changes?
Oh, so we used to not do team member feedback as much as now. Now my operations system manager, we get feedback every month. And then when we're meeting and training people, we get feedback there. Mm. Because they are in the process. So we don't give everybody the opportunity to change their processes, because I feel like on our team, that would create a little bit of chaos. So our operations side can change the processes or whatever, but they will get feedback. And then we also have a Tuesday meeting that every Tuesday gives feedback and updates everything and goes over any challenges we're having. So he will send out a rating scale on all the feedback we need at least once a month. And then also on Tuesday, we get verbal feedback. So we do a lot of feedback right now, a lot of talking between the teams, the team members, making sure we understand what they feel comfortable with. If there is a struggle, why is there a struggle? Because sometimes it might be that they just don't like change, or sometimes it might be a legitimate, hey, this could be done correctly. And right now we're very big on, don't come to me with a problem, come to me with a solution. Talk to me about the solution you see, because your voice is as important as mine. You're in the day-to-day. You mm-hmm. see it. Mm-hmm. You talk to the people. Mm-hmm. And so giving a voice to our team, oh, I've loved.
What's the relationship between your processes and your metrics and your KPIs? How do you know if the process is working?
Okay, so, well, we love Lead Simple.
Dope. Love hearing that.
Because that's where we run our processes. But also Lead Simple has an opportunity to do KPIs and metrics on what your response rate on emails, because we do inbox, so we love that. But I have an auditor on my team that runs all the KPIs weekly, and then they audit the numbers, because in property where I feel like it's very easy not to get real numbers if you're not careful. Because if someone puts in a lease renewal and they accidentally code something wrong, then that number's wrong. So our auditor goes through and weekly does our KPIs for everybody, and then they have one-on-ones with their manager and to go over their KPIs. And then we look at those KPIs and look at our processes. Are they aligning? And then we go from there.
So this is like a in part a data sanitation function. Is that what I'm hearing? That they're making sure that like the data
went as clear. 100%.
How interesting.
Yeah. So I have a full-time person that just does that.
Well, so there's a lot of QA going on here.
Oh yes.
Okay. Interesting. Let's keep going on QA. What about tenant-facing fees that at times certain staff members may not, for whatever reason, feel the need to charge, et cetera? How do you audit compliance there?
So let's 5-day notices, or let's go with late fees, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, you'll get a tenant that calls in and says, hey, you know,
I had a situation. Yep.
And so, well, we go over who was late, and our auditor goes in, looks at that function. And we do allow one time grace if, like, there's a death and they've always been on time. Let's say they were late once, then they have a one time grace, and that's supposed to be documented in their ledger. And so our auditor will go in and audit all that every week. And I don't feel like you can do that monthly. It's too much. But our auditor will go in weekly and audit that. Leases, lease renewals, PMs, our call answer rate, everything.
Okay, so let's talk about what this nets out to. A strong QA. You mentioned being overhired. When I hear overhiring, there's two ways to think about. One ditch could be that it's a number of bodies that demonstrates inefficiency on a specific process. But the other way to look at it that I think is typically a better lens is that the bodies relate to labor, which is money. And when you're hiring globally, you have the opportunity, as you said, 4-to-1 ratio, whatever the ratio may be. But you're focused on QA, you're focused on making investments. What does this net out to? Talk to me about finance, talk to me about cash flow and what the business is able to perform and provide for you and your family.
Oh, well, like you see, I can come and go. I'm not in the day-to-day because I have a big enough team. The company is doing great. We're making around $300 to $350 per property. So we're in that $300 range. My goal is to get above that.
Your revenue per unit?
Yes, revenue per unit.
And what's your average rent?
My average rent is around $1,200 to $1,500.
Okay, got it. So your RPU aggressiveness, which is the ratio of average rent to revenue per unit, that ratio is strong for you.
Very strong. I'm very high fee based, but at the same time, my fees are legitimate. Yeah, they're valued.
I hear that with the investments that you're making.
Yes, 100%. And that's why, like, property management, management fees keep on the lights. That's all it does. So we're a 60-40 ratio. I'm 60% fees, I'm 40% management. That's what I'm at. And I'm trying to actually spread that a little higher because that's what's allowing me to hire the people I need to hire and get the teams in place that I need to get in to be able to grow where I want to grow. So many times people focus on this is the amount of people, because you hear the conversations, this is how many people you should have per how many properties you have. And I don't think that's the case. You have to look at what investments you're putting in, what's your net, what you're making, and who you can hire to be able to get where you need to get. So I think there's more of an equation behind that than just how many people you should have for how many properties you have. Like you say, you invest in your people, your HR, all these things that maybe not give you a return right off the bat, but really it will give you a bigger return down the road because you're investing in your people.
Let's talk about your quality of life and how that's evolved over the years.
Oh. In 2013, when we started, I started as everything pretty much. I did the accounting. I did the books. I did the tenants. My husband did the tenants at first, and then I realized we have two different personalities. He was way too nice. Oh, just pay when you want to pay. I said, no, I'm cutting that off. So I went in and I said, nope, late fees are this. This is what's happening. Right off that first month, we made $5,000 on late fees. I said, nope, we're changing this. And but So at first it was nitty gritty. I was working around the clock. I was figuring out how we can change this. We were having meetings together. And over time, we started hiring. I travel whenever I want. I travel at least once a month now. We went to Greece and Europe for a month this last year. And then we got back, and then we went to BVI. And then we went to... but that's because of my team. And I texted him today. I said, you know what? I'm very grateful for you. Everything you do is because I get to do what I do. I wouldn't be here at this conference if I had to work 24/7 still doing my job. But it's a company and it's a career. But I would say it has evolved immensely. I can come and go as I want. I get to, if I want to leave, I can leave. I have a director. I have certain people in place that can do their job.
How do you think about the chase versus getting the thing that you want? You can either be driven by the pursuit and the process, or you can be driven by the idea of like getting this specific thing.
Okay, so how I look at that, if you're talking about a physical item or a goal you might have, I look at you have to enjoy the journey, every step of the process, if that's what you're asking. The struggle, like that first step, or like if I put a goal in place and let's say, because I do 1-year goal, 3-year goal, 10-year goals, and some of those goals are outlandish. I mean, they're crazy. But I don't look at the end where that's where I have to get and that's what brings me happiness. I look at the journey and look at every time I fail, it's okay. I'm learning from it. I'm growing. And so that's what I look at. I look at the steps that I'm able to take in the journey and enjoying that journey. And that's what I talk to my team about. Like, you're going to make mistakes. Don't look at me and think you have to be perfect, because I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. Mm-hmm. When I was training my controller, when he came in, I love this because, and I explain it to everybody that comes into my team. I trained him, and then he went to his own office, and he came in, and he goes, "Tiff, I made a mistake." I said, "You came to me. I don't care. Mm-hmm. We can fix it." So the goal is for me is to teach people to enjoy that journey. Don't just fixate on the end goal, but enjoy every step of the way. Because if you fixate on the end goal, that's not going to bring you what you want anyways. It's the joy in the journey that gets you what you really want.
You strike me as a high agency individual, meaning somebody that just chooses to believe that what's in your control is what's worth focusing on, and that you have autonomy rather than the things around you. It's like what's self-generated is what's going to be determinative of the outcomes in your life. Could you tell me about any times in your life where you struggled with that and maybe you were tempted to flip to a low agency perspective of like feeling like things were happening to you? Yeah.
I gotta think about this. Because I am very much, I don't see a limit. I really don't. I don't see a limit. I really do believe anything you put to your mind, you can do anything you want. It depends on what you believe on and what you're willing to do for it. Now, I will tell you, when I got the phone call that my brother was passing away, I was in my apartment. I was walking to the door and about to leave. And my mom called me and said, "Hey, you need to get to the hospital now. We don't have much time." And I remember walking into that room, and there was choices that I had to make right there. And he did end up passing away. And the choices you have to make at that time is, are you going to go down a road and go into depression and feed to this? Or are you going to feed to go, you know what, I got to change and I got to move on. And he's going to want me to move on too. Not move on and forget, but still live your life. And there was a moment that I was like, oh, this sucks. You know, my brother and I, we lived together. We were close. And it was really hard to lose him. And the sadness that you feel when you lose a sibling is just like nothing else. Now, I've never lost a child, so I can't speak to that. But when I lost him, there was a moment that I was like, man, life is hard. Life sucks. And but I transitioned out of that pretty quick. Now, in business, if you want to go to another note, there are times that you're like, oh my gosh, can we just please get on a flat level playing field where we're not like this all the time? I mean, I don't know. Maybe you don't go through that sometimes.
I totally haven't
seen it too. But you can't stick there. Barbara Cochran said something. It's not a matter if you get hit. It's not a matter if you fall down. It's a matter how long you stay down. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the point. And you're going to get hit. You're going to fall down. You're gonna lay on the ground. But how long are you laying there? Mm-hmm. Are you fixated on what's happening to you? Mm-hmm. Or are you fixated on what you can change? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. There's moments that I go there and then I'm like, I'm not staying there. I'm going somewhere else. And that's, you change that mind. Because everybody's going to have that, this sucks. This is hard. Man, I just want to cry.
This sucks. They suck. Why'd they do that? Don't yes. they know better?
Oh, yes.
That's where it comes up for me is with team members, interpersonal stuff. When I'm bitching about somebody else, I can feel and I can sense when I'm being indulgent. And I know that's just for me. Pretending that it's their fault, that's just for me. I'm just kind of savoring that candy bar, chewing on it for a minute. It's not good for me. I'm not getting a lot out of it. It's not helping either of us, but I'm tempted in the moment. Mm-hmm. But what serves me is to say, who hired that person? Who trained them? Who onboarded them? Who handled all of those conversations? It was me. Bad employees don't like sneak into your company. It's not like some epidemic that they're coming in here. And even the idea of bad employees is also total bullshit. These are people who do want to do a good job. They may not have the skills or the capability. The role may not be a fit for them. But everybody wants to do a good job. And if they don't want to do a good job, you still hired them and brought them into the organization. That perspective is really helpful for me. When you talk about your brother passing, that I relate to that thinking about my dad passing in 2006. It was the emotion was so raw and intense that I wasn't able to feel it. And what felt like agency for me in the moment was running from it and like not looking at it. Like my agency is I'm just gonna grip so hard and I'm not going to feel it. And that cost me something. The fact that I wasn't able to integrate the emotion and the feeling meant that it dramatically delayed how much time it took for me to process it. And it heightened the size of the emotions net. But in the long run, that didn't happen to me. That was something that the way that I related to it was self-generated. The meaning of what I made up. Was I left? Was I abandoned? Or was I mentored? And did I get this amazing, beautiful relationship that I now carry with me in my heart for the rest of my life? On some level, most of stuff in life is really made up. It's the meaning that you assign meaning that's self-generated. I vibe when I'm around other people that come from that perspective, because if it's all made up, I'm going to make up some super dope shit and have a really good time along the process.
Well, you said something really important, though. You have to deal with it. Like, everything that I say, it doesn't mean you don't deal with it. It just means, like, I give an example. You put all your emotions in a box. You deal with the crap you got to deal with. Bring that emotion out. Cry when you need to cry. Scream when you need to cry. Put it back. Deal with it, but that doesn't mean it takes over your life. You know, something you said, resonates. Employees, and this is big in our company right now, and every morning someone does a meeting, and they say what they're going to do to change the company. Because, you know, so often in companies or employees or even us, we say, you do this, you change this, you can change. But how often do we look at what can I change? Mm-hmm. What can I make better? And so right now, everybody, when they lead a meeting, I say, don't tell me what someone else can do. Tell me what you can do. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. And that's where we got to change the persona. So many times when people say, I'm looking at myself, I got to be doing something wrong. No, it means we're changing. It means we're getting better. It means we're learning and growing. And that's the point. You know, it doesn't mean, you're horrible. Everything puts a negative or a positive connotation. And I'm trying to change that within our company. Just because you say you can do something better doesn't mean you did something wrong.
It's actually flipping it back on other people is an act of empowerment. It's not to say it's your fault. It's to say, guess what? You could actually do something about this. Mm-hmm. The thing that you feel low agency about that is happening, surprise, you could change it. Isn't that awesome? In the moment, it may feel heavy of like, oh, I got to think about this thing. It's like, well, you don't have to. It's just how important is it, you know?
100%.
If it's a big deal, wouldn't you want to? If you're really amped up about it, wouldn't that be like great news that there's something mm-hmm. you can contribute? And that's the opportunity to flip complaints into possibility.
Yes.
Complaints are typically viewed as a bad thing. And when it's not wrapped in any sense of agency, yeah, it is. It's just, it's useless bitching. But if you can take the complaint, look at it and say, okay, what did I contribute to that? What requests do I have to change? That's high agency. That converts complaints into possibilities. And man, that just feels like such a gift to practice for myself and to invite other people into.
100%. And I hate to say this, but I think Lead Simple does such an amazing job with that. When I see y'all on Facebook or if I see someone that says something, you're like, hey, let's get this taken care of. Let's look at this. Let's talk about this. I mean, y'all are picture perfect of that, where y'all take something and you're like, okay, you look at it and you're an example of this. And I think it's important for people to realize, look at the complaint and look at what we did wrong. Mm. You know, and I say this when my team goes, oh, I had a owner complained, and I say, and you're complaining about him? Look at it, turn it. Why is he complaining? What happened? Did you call him back when you said you would? Did you email him back when you said you would? What happened to get him to that frustrated level? And so many times we want to put it on someone else and or complain about it. And I'm like, okay, look at it, turn it. And I think how you said it was perfect. You got to turn that complaint around and go, what did I do to actually get that complaint? Mm-hmm. What happened? And that doesn't mean we don't deal with crazy people sometimes, but I really do believe that people only become crazy when communication is not given. Mm. When you don't clearly communicate expectations or perceive what's going on. My background is psychology and social work. I love to talk to someone face-to-face because I can read them and see what's going on in their mind a little bit. And I think so many people just want to put an email out. Sometimes you need to get on that phone to hear that voice. Sometimes you need to do something different. And I think it's very important to turn that around and figure out what happened to create the chaos that we're experiencing, or what happened to create the complaint, and what did I do to bring that? You know, if we look at ourselves and not somebody else, a lot of times we can fix something a lot faster.
I had a mentor early in life that said, blame yourself. And that wasn't gaslighting. It wasn't to gaslight yourself. It was empowerment. If you're the problem, you can change.
Exactly. Great news. You can't change someone else. You can't decide what they're going to do, but you can change yourself. And that's why I'm so big on mindset. That's why I'm so big on learning on mindset, reading biographies, looking at other business owners, looking at what they did. And like, for instance, I just read Elon Musk's biography. And
brutal.
Oh, my gosh. But I love it. And if you watch his Netflix biography, because I did both. I like to do both to kind of see the difference. But in 2008, he almost went bankrupt with SpaceX and Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how many people came to him and said, just shut one down. Just shut it down. Mm-hmm. You're losing. You're losing. And how easy would it have been? Mm-hmm. No one would have blamed him.
No. People and said, celebrated him. Like,
exactly.
Good decision.
Yeah, exactly. But instead, he went to the solution. He goes, what can I do? Instead of being depressed, and not saying he didn't have those moments, but instead of focusing on it, he focused on a solution. And look at the companies now. I mean, he's the only rocket that's gone up in space with people. Mm. Bezos tried.
Richard Branson.
Yep, he tried. And they're not there yet. But if you look at the solution, and so many people rag on Elon, but I go, his mind's got to be strong. Mm. And you look at what he went through, but what did he do to get there? He never lit. And he also went to his team and said, I have 3 launches. You know how many launches it took him? It took him 4 to get up. He blew up the first 3. And all of his team will say, look, one thing that you can learn about Elon is that he will tell you, continue to blow it up. We will learn from it. And I think that's key. You gotta be willing to fail to succeed. If you're so scared to fail, you're not gonna succeed. If you're not willing to make mistakes, you're not gonna get to that other side.
That biography of Elon was written by the same author that wrote a biography on Steve Jobs and another other famous characters. And those two biographies in particular were hard to read because you could see that so much of the greatness was born out of trauma.
It was.
Was born out of an abusive environment for Elon, direct abandonment for Steve Jobs. And I found myself perplexed at times reading that biography. I saw some dark elements that compelled people towards success, very clearly astronomical levels of success, but also at times made them low-key abusive and transactional with people, etc. When I think about my own pursuit of what I'm optimizing for, it's not money first. Mm-mm. It's not building an empire first. And I don't think that either of those individuals are driven by either money or an empire. They were driven by a specific change in the world that they wanted to effectuate. And in their cases, it was related to product for jobs and something mechanical and like the next evolution of humanity for Elon, a little out there, but interesting. For me, it's about impacting other human beings, presencing myself, having a deep level of connection, and really enjoying the ride along the way, believing that my enjoyment actually does map to success. What is the thing that you are looking to get out of this business journey that is non-monetary in nature?
Oh, relationships. Man, I will text my director of property management all the time, and she'll come to me and just talk personally with me some. I mean, at first, I am a transactional person. My disc is bottom line. So I have had to teach myself that that's not what this is about. It is about the relationships, the opportunity that I can give people to build futures for their families. Something that we do in our company that I love to do is teach people about real estate and what it can do for generations. That is monetary, but the teaching them's not. Like, I take time out of my day. I like to talk to them about what they can do for their families, 529 plans, things like that. Is everybody in the situation that they can do that right now? No, but I love, really, it's about the relationships and what the company can do for others. And what it can do for my kids, to be honest. Mm. And what it can do for generations. Mm. But I think the end goal is we're here for relationships. We're here for that connection. We're not here for the money. And given I do like money, I'm not going to say I don't, okay? I like to travel and it here takes money, it. Okay? So I'm not trying to put that persona off. But at the end, even though I am a transactional person, I've had to teach myself. It's really the relationships and caring about the individual and seeing what I can do to help that individual get where they want. Whether that means that they're going to be in my company for a year or 2 years and they have another goal, I want to help them get there. Mm. Like, I have a director of maintenance, and her end goal, she wants to work in the forests. And so we talk about that. Like, she had a goal. She wants to get and be able to travel for a month. And so I sat down and I said, well, when's that going to happen? When's the end goal? I said, we need to figure this out, because if that's your goal, I want that to be my goal.
I love that.
But that's what it's all about. It's not about, it used to be for me, how long are you in that seat? I need that work done.
What'd you get done?
What'd you get done? You know, what'd you get done?
Keeping tabs on people.
Oh, that was what it was, but it's not what it's about.
I feel that. That feels heartfelt, genuine, and sincere, and I'm glad to be in this industry with people like you. I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story today.
Well, we appreciate you, man. You're a leader in the industry.
I'm trying, and I'm just grateful to have great people to be with and to connect with and to be in an industry where there is community and relationship. It's really special.
It is. It's we really appreciate you. Yeah, your team's amazing.
Thank you.
Seriously.
I received that. I appreciate you. Until next time.
That's it for this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. You can check out other episodes along the way. If you're watching this on YouTube, appreciate a subscribe. Any comments? I'm always here to engage. If you're listening on an audio platform, would really appreciate a review. It's a great way to help other people find out about the show.